Well, I mentioned this is our final lesson in the series, and appropriately it comes down to us choosing to trust God. You can know all about it, you can know why you should, you can know that you ought to. Now the question is, will you? Will you? Psalm 56, 3 and 4. The psalmist, "What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. In God I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me." Notice the concept there. I will trust in thee. I will praise his word. I will not fear. David here is acknowledging that he was afraid. Now, I don't know. You have to be some kind of a idiot not to be afraid in some situations. We just heard on the radio, just before we turned it to the CD music, that a pastor who has two vocations, secular and the pastorate, was relieved from his job, set off from the job, because it was found out that from the pulpit he preached against homosexuality. This is where we are today, see. This is, there is a religion dominant in the United States, and it is not Christianity. So there are things around that can make us afraid, but that's not the end of it. He was afraid, but in spite of that fear, he chose to trust God. He was able to recognize the presence of God, the power of God, the steadfastness, the omnipotence of God. Hebrews 13, 5, "For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." So that's his promise, and you may choose to count on that. Godly acceptance of adversity always begins with an act of the will based on a proper knowledge of God. We set ourselves to believe in the overwhelming sovereignty and wisdom and love of God, no matter how we feel. How we feel should not be determinative. So be willing to believe. When you find yourself in the depths of grief, determine not to be controlled by your feelings. Choose to believe God. Psalm 34, 4. "I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears." Sometimes it's not so much what's going on around you as it is your fear of what's going on around you. "We have nothing to fear but fear itself," right? Winston Churchill, right? There is no conflict in choosing to believe and asking God to deliver you from fearful things. Trusting God is not some stoic absence of feeling or pain. It is trusting God to do something beneficial through your pain. It may be a benefit to you. It may be a benefit to someone you don't even know. We were talking about the concept of God sitting down with young Joseph, sitting down for a cup of tea and saying, "Joseph, here's the thing. We're going to have this big famine, and I want you to save your country, your people. So here's what we're going to need to do. We're going to need to get you enslaved in Egypt. Finally, then, once you've learned the language and the culture and all that, get you into a jail where the Pharaoh can get a hold of you. What do you think?" You know, if God did it that way, that would be a kind of an interesting thing. We'd go terrified into the work. He doesn't do that. He says, "This is the way I'm going to do it, and I'm just going to put you through it." So let's ask him to do that for us, that something beneficial will come even through our pain. That may be for us, but it may be for others. if God sat down at tea with you and said, I'm going to put you through a horrible time of suffering. You don't need it, but you're strong enough to withstand it. But what will happen all around you is that the people of the church will be so concerned for you that they will be turning to prayer. They will be looking around and saying, if I can help in loving service, then I need to do this or I need to do that. And he said it will be good for them. What would you say? Would you bow to that wisdom? This is what Christ did on the cross. There was, you know, no benefit, personal benefit to him for that, but absolute benefit for those who could believe. So trusting God is refusing to sin against God by giving in to distrustful thoughts about him. Well, let's think how God is trustworthy. Choosing to trust God is not fooling yourself into a calm attitude. God is really worthy of your trust. We may lose our sense of his comforting presence, but we never lose the presence itself. 1 Peter 5:7, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Dr. John Brown said of this verse, the figurative cast, not lay, seems to intimate that the duty enjoined, the duty commanded, is one that requires an effort to cast. And experience tells us it is no easy matter to throw off the burden of carefulness, being full of care. It was true of him in the 1800s, true of us. Maybe the 1700s, Dr. Brown. So you must say, in effect, Lord, I choose to cast off this anxiety onto you. But I cannot do this of myself. I will trust you by your Spirit to enable me to leave the fear with you and not take it back as soon as I get up off my knees. Well, are there some pitfalls in trusting, some hard things? Well, yes. If trusting God in adversity is difficult, it seems to me that trusting him in comfortable times may be even harder. Are you trusting God as much now that your financial condition is comfortable as you did when you were troubled about your next meal? Are you trusting God, or are you trusting his instruments of blessing? God dealt with Israel in this, Deuteronomy 8. He says, now, this is Israel, the next generation. They're getting ready to go into the promised land. He says, when you get there, it's not going to be hand-to-mouth like it is here in the wilderness. You're going to have fields. You're going to have food. You're going to have stuff. So he says, beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, miraculous stuff, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, that he might prove thee, put you to the test, to do thee good at the latter end. Put you through the testing so at the end it'll be better for you. And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of mine hand hath gotten me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. You can't do anything on your own. That he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto his fathers, as it is this day. We should work for our livelihood. The Apostle Paul reveals that those who will not work, choose not to work, should not eat. Eating is a mighty motive. Make a person even want to go to work. So we should work for our livelihood, but we should not trust it for our security. How stable is your job? How stable is your income? What would it take in a day's time to end that all? Not a whole lot, yes.
How stable is your life?
That's right, how stable is your life? You're a heartbeat away from death, right? Maybe not one heartbeat, but. Here's the question. Are you trusting God in the details of life as much as the problems? Philip Bennett Power, in his book, The I Wills of the Psalms, how about a name, Power? I am Power. He said this, "The daily circumstances of life will afford us opportunity enough of glorifying God in trust without our waiting for any extraordinary calls upon our faith. Let us remember that the extraordinary circumstances of life are but few, but much of life may slip past without their occurrence, and that if we be not faithful and trusting in that which is little, we are not likely to be so in that which is great. Let our trust be reared in the humble nursery of our own daily experience, with its ever recurring little wants and trials and sorrows. And then, when need be, it will come forth to do such great things as are required of it." Prove yourself in the little everyday things. My wife was telling me that she had limited time in her lunch hour. She'd go to these places and she'd say, "Lord, could I get a parking spot close enough that I don't have to walk for 10 minutes? And then somebody would pull out and she'd pull in. Amazing what God can do when you recognize that even these things, you're dependent on Him. Think about, yes. That's right.
So that's one of the things that I mentioned to people that come through my line. I say, well, the sun came up, it was scheduled, and it did.
That's right. God is faithful, and we see it by the sun and the moon and the stars and the cycle of the weather, His way of doing it. Let's think about giving thanks always. 1 Thessalonians 5:18. In everything. We sometimes put those two words together, everything. But it's almost like emphasizing it. In everything, give thanks. For this, you giving thanks. This is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. People walking around saying, "I'm trying to find the will of God for my life." They're talking about, should I be a banker or a neurosurgeon or a missionary or what, you know? He says, let's try focusing on the small things. Here is the will of God for you, concerning you. Give thanks in everything. We are to be thankful in good times and bad. That's the definition of everything, right? Being thankful in hard times is not a natural virtue. We need to choose to be thankful. A recent email, I read the story of a 90-year-old lady whose husband died. And she checked into a nursing home. The attendant led her to the room. As he was walking, he described the room to her and said, and she said, "I love it." And he was a little afraid. He hoped he hadn't overstated the condition of the room. And he said, but you haven't even seen it yet. She replied this, "That doesn't have anything to do with it. Happiness is something you decide on ahead of time. Whether I like my room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged or how but it's how I arrange my mind. I already decided to love it. It's a decision I make every morning when I wake up. I have a choice. I can spend the day in bed recounting the difficulty I have with the parts of my body that no longer work, or get out of bed and be thankful for the ones that do. Each day is a gift. As long as my eyes open, I'll focus on the new day and all the happy memories I've stored away just for this time in my life." There's a wise woman. We can give thanks in all things because we know God is doing the right thing in our lives at all times. We choose to do that. Worship, choosing to worship. Job's first response to his trials were worship. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground. Remember that all those things are signs of extreme grief. He's not floating in a holy look up into the sky, you know. This is him down in the dirt under the grip of such horrible things that happened to him. And worshiped. There with his face in the dust, he chose to worship. And he said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." May we have the courage to worship at the time of our greatest trials. Worship involves a two-directional view. Looking upward, we see God in all his majesty and power and glory and sovereignty, steadfastness, eternity. We see his mercy, his goodness, and his grace. Looking downward, we see ourselves in weakness and sinfulness. We recognize we deserve nothing from God but judgment. Worship, then, has an attitude of humble acceptance on our part of God's right to do whatever he pleases in our lives. We acknowledge that every good thing we have has come from above, and he may take it away at his pleasure. These are gifts. He didn't say, "I give this to you and it's yours forever." It's just stuff. In fact, he says it's all passing away. Don't get too attached to it, he says. Because to accomplish the greater good, I may have to take it from you suddenly, without warning. Let's think about choosing humility. Trusting God is an act of humility. Adversity is sometimes given to humble us. Let's just consider that fact. Why am I having to go through this? Maybe because you put such a big emphasis on I when you said that. I don't care if they do, but why am I having to face this? 2 Corinthians 12:7, "And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations," Paul says, "there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure." Above measure means completely out of the bounds. Be absurdly given to pride. Trusting God resists the pride that says, "I deserve better than this." And then let's choose in all of this to seek God's glory. Years ago, I told my wife, I found a theme for my daily life. It's not about me. Come to the place where I'm getting upset about this and upset about that, and then, wait a minute, this isn't about me. This is about God, and this is about others. My first commandment is to love him. My second commandment is to love them. I didn't show up in all those commandments. It's not about me. When we trust God, the focus ceases to be about us and how we feel about adversity. We can count it all joy, as James commanded. When Paul found out that others were trying to take his place after he was sent to prison, he said this, "What then? Notwithstanding every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, I therefore do rejoice, yea, and will," that's a word of choice, "and will rejoice." Let us learn to turn every trial into an occasion to bring glory to God. Can you trust God in all things? I think of the martyrs, humiliated, mocking crowd all around, taken up, tied to that post, wood piled around their feet, and the fire set. Everybody that I've ever talked about that has been burned says there's nothing more horrible than being burned. But the record of these martyrs, some of them just became detached, looked to God. Some of them prayed aloud for those that were killing them. And this happened enough, I'm sure not 100%, but it happened enough, that the historians say that the church was planted by the blood of the martyrs. People looked at that and said, this must be real. I need to find out about that. Can you, will you, do you choose to trust God in all things? Comments or questions?